T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
Strictly wearing my White Sox executive hat, you know, it's obviously been frustrating. We were in a really good spot when we were together in Glendale and very excited for this season, and obviously understand that White Sox fans and employees and staff members have been excited to sort of start reaping some of the fruit from some of the difficult years of the rebuild that were behind us now. So we share that frustration.
High expectations on the south side of Chicago, where the White Sox put all their chips in the middle of the table this offseason, making the transition from a team that's rebuilding to a team that is going for it. Meantime, on the north side, the Cubs going for it in big-time fashion. Is this the last year where the core stays together? Brought in David Ross, you have a healthy Rizzo, Schwarber, Bryant, Baez, and Contreras. There's a lot to like about what's brewing on the north side as well. It's the Mully and Haw Show on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score, broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. Alongside Tom Thayer and Ron Coomer, I'm Zach Zaidman. We're filling in for the dynamic duo of Mike Mulligan and David Haw this morning. This hour is brought to you by ComEd. Sign up for outage alerts at ComEd.com. All right, workouts begin in baseball. We'll start on the north side, where Coom, you'll be there later today as the Cubs get their first workouts going in what they're calling baseball summer camp. What are the first few things that you're going to be looking for as a former player to know that things are going to be different in 2020?
Well, first of all, unfortunately, you're going to be concerned about the testing, right? And is everybody healthy? Let's say everybody is able to participate today. I would be looking, if I were David Ross, at my starting pitchers first and foremost, and what kind of arm shape are they in? I know earlier or late morning, they're going to start throwing bullpens. I know David has been talking to his rotation already, so he's going to have a decent idea of where they are. But you're gonna want to know where they're at stamina wise with their arm, and see what their stuff looks like here in the first couple days. All these guys will throw bullpens within the next 2 days, I would assume, and you'll know what you got there. The other thing that you will see, David will pay close attention to his position players and the guys you just mentioned. You know, the core group of his team, Anthony, KB, Javi, Contreras, you know, Schwarbs. You know, you're looking at those guys and seeing, you know, what are they like physically? Are they able to run around and move? Do they have some little issues going on from their workouts, you know, during the pandemic? So you're going to evaluate them here in the short term, and then I would anticipate within this first week you're going to start seeing inter-squad games with the Cubs and a lot of live batting practice, pitchers throwing to live hitters, and trying to get that going and get guys back to a game speed as soon as possible, because that's the one thing you can't do when you're working out with your friends or you're just working out by yourself. You can't simulate that speed that the game gets played, whether you're hitting out of a machine, you know, or taking batting practice. You've got to get back into what the speed of the game is like in the major leagues. I really believe you got a lot of health. You got to really pay attention here in the first week and a half of health, though, Zach.
Hey, Coom, I have a question. So when you get reintroduced back into football, when you get full pads on and stuff, something is obvious as a three-point stance that you see every offense and defensive lineman get in mostly every play. When you get back to training camp, it kind of takes you a couple days, maybe, you know, a couple days of practices and full pads to get into that comfort zone where you can feel you could be as athletic as you possibly can be, and it kind of takes a little bit of time to do that. So this is my long question. Watching the PGA, I watch Bryson DeChambeau, and he looks like the most robotic swinger of a golf ball I've seen in his pre-stance at the ball. And sometimes I think, oh, my God, how can he hit it so well because he looks so robotic and stiff? Have you ever looked at a baseball player at the plate and go, oh, my God, I don't know how he gets things done by the way he stands? Or does your batter stance take the little bit time to develop at the beginning of baseball like a football player's three-point stance?
There are guys that do, and I've been watching the same thing. I shake my head every day. He's one of those guys, Tommy, that has made a body change, right? He's gained 40 pounds.
Right.
And now all of a sudden he's hitting the ball 350 yards off the tee, and he might be the longest driver of the ball on tour. So he made a body change and, you know, hit the weight room and hit the kitchen and decided he was going to, you know, make an entire change of his game. And I tip my hat to him to doing that. But he is a very robotic player. In baseball, I have always looked at certain hitters that have that tendency of, you know, we always call they have one spot that they swing, it seems like, all the time. If a pitcher throws it in that spot, they're going to kill him. But if a pitcher can move the ball around the zone, the hitter has no chance. And that's what separates guys from maybe playing Double-A and Triple-A to being a big league hitter. So there is. I really feel like the hardest part about baseball is in early camp is just being out there for so long and being on your feet and having to start and stop all the time. There's so much in Major League spring training of you get all cranked up and your body's hot and you're taking ground balls and you're doing your work, then you stop. And then a half hour goes by because you change fields or you're setting up the next part of the day for the work that you're going to do. Those things take time for your body to accept that you're real hot, now you're cold for a half hour, now you got to get real hot again real quick and get into a defensive drill or something like that. So those are the things to me that took some time for your feet, your ankles, your knees, your hips to get accustomed to doing things at a game speed, stopping and then going. So that'll be something that David Ross will watch, you know, especially with his infielders, that you got to kind of ease them into the normal routine of a baseball day. But you know, these guys, they understand this. I mean, they should. They really should. You know, they know what they're getting into, and they know this camp is going to be, you know, the volume's on high for these guys to get ready in a hurry. I would anticipate the work on the field being turned up, and you're going to see a lot more game speed, you know, guys taking ground balls at a very quick pace. And I think that's going to be really good for the Cubs, to be honest with you.
All right. So before we talked about the heat and how it'll affect the preparation to get ready to play baseball, and you were saying that you acclimate to the heat better, you guys, you know, and those things. But now thinking about John Lester, because I watch him on the mound and I look mm-hmm. at how profusely he sweats, and it reminds me a lot of myself. But does the ability to pitch change when you have that type of moisture around your forearm, around your wrist, around your fingertips? Because again, talking about the heat and how it's going to be, do pitchers have to alter or do anything differently when they do start sweating that profusely?
They definitely alter what they do, and you have to. So a guy like John has been fully aware of his situation with his sweating. So there's a rosin bag on the mound. You'll see John go to the rosin bag quite a bit. And what that will do is it'll make his two fingers and his thumb sticky with the moisture from sweating. So that'll be a help for him. You'll see John go to, with his left hand, go to his right forearm and get moisture on his hand. Then he'll go to the rosin bag, and that will make those fingers sticky, and he'll be able to grip the baseball better. The one thing that the rule changes, you're no longer are you able to lick your fingers and go to the baseball. So I think they're giving guys the ability to put some kind of moisture or something in their pocket, maybe a wet rag. To me, most guys aren't going to have that problem. They're going to be able to, because it's midsummer, you're going to be sweating, and you'll go to some sweat. When you watch John now, from now on, Tommy, watch him go to his right forearm, and then he'll get his moisture from there, which is totally legal, and then he'll go to the baseball after the rosin bag, and that's how he'll get the grip of the baseball and use that moisture and sweat to his advantage.
All right, Zach, let me just ask one more dumb baseball questions of my observances. So if you're a pitcher at the pitching mound, and yep. Earlier you were talking about the pitch placement of Kyle Hendricks or the speed of Mills in a situation like that. So a pitcher, when he's getting ready to release the pitch, does the pitcher see the plate from the pitcher's mound, or is the target always the glove?
You know, it's a great question, and I don't have a great answer for that. When I pitched when I was young, I threw to a target. And what I would do is, and I was a big person on visualization. So even as a third baseman, I would visualize whatever play I was making, catching the baseball, and now turning my body and getting that visual of me throwing the ball right through the chest of the first baseman. And I do believe pitchers pick out spots on the catcher, and it's not always the glove, but it might be their shin guard. It might be the glove. But they pick out spots that they're trying to hit with that catcher, and they're not throwing at home plate. They're throwing to that spot. So what it does is it takes, you know, your large focus of, you know, the whole home plate scene, the umpire, the catcher, the hitter, home plate. And then what it does is you're getting ready to throw the ball and get the pitch underway, your focus gets much more narrow, and it locks into a spot that you're trying to hit with that baseball. I do the exact same practice playing golf. When I step up to the tee with my driver, I pick a spot down at the other end of the fairway, and it's something very small. One tree, it's not a big open area. It's one tree, and that's what I try to hit to. And I think what that does is it, and the pitchers do the same, it gets that focus down to something that is very specific. I would do the same thing as a hitter. You'd see the pitcher, all of them, and he's getting set, and then all of a sudden my hard focus would get right to his release point, so I could see that baseball coming right out of his hand and out of his fingers. You know, so you got that hard focus. And I think all good baseball players do that, whether they're pitching or hitting.
All right, let's go to the South Side, because we started the segment by listening to the White Sox general manager Rick Hahn talk about the optimism he has for the 2020 season, and everyone knows they're gearing up. Coom, you were around. You got a chance to see the Cubs when that was happening through some of the ugly years of the rebuild, when people outside of Wrigley Field, and you can understand this, they started to lose a little bit of faith and wonder what the heck is going on here. Then 2015 comes, and all of a sudden the Cubs wowed Major League Baseball. The White Sox believe that this year could be their 2015, if you will. What are you looking for on the South Side? Because the Cubs are going to see a lot of the White Sox this season, the way baseball is designed. What has to be different between the gear up and this year to make you know that next step has been taken?
Well, for the White Sox, when you look at them, their success or failure is going to go through their rotation also, just like every team. Giolito, you know, had a great year last year, really, really a good first half, tailed off a little bit at the end, like most young pitchers, but a very talented young guy. I think he wants to be the number one starter and has that you know, that presence about him. So he's got to be very good. I thought a great move for the Chicago White Sox was signing Dallas Keuchel. Dallas Keuchel is a guy who does things a lot like Kyle Hendricks. Very cerebral, understands how to pitch, not overpowering. So I think Dallas Keuchel is going to bring a different element to that rotation. And then you're helping guys like Dylan Cease and some of them young guys who are power guys, all of a sudden understanding that you don't have to throw the ball 100 miles an hour to get big league hitters out. So I think that's going to be a good move. The Gio Gonzalez and some of them, and, we've seen Gio Gonzalez a bunch. You know, he's kind of on his last leg as a big league pitcher. He's an older guy. May help, may not. And then right away, I go, you know, they signed Grandal, great catcher, leader. That's a big help to their group because you've got that presence of a guy who's been in the playoffs. He came from a group that was expecting to win in Milwaukee. So that was a big addition. And these young guys, all these young guys that Rick Hahn has either traded for, signed, drafted, they got to get off to a good start on the offensive side of the game. That's going to be Rick Renteria's job to really get them believing in themselves. And if they have a bad first couple days, you know, to keep grinding. And it's not easy because there's going to be a lot of pressure on these young guys. I really look at the White Sox. They're totally different than the Cubs. The Cubs have players and veteran players that have gone through these battles. The White Sox have a bunch of young guys who are extremely talented, but they need to get off to a good start offensively to have a lot of success. And, boy, I'll tell you what, if they do, look out because they are a really talented young group. And in this kind of a sprint in 60 games, you know, the White Sox could be really dangerous if they get off to a good start offensively.
And that's the fun thing about a 60-game season is everyone is in it. Even if you don't have the depth that you normally would need to overcome a 162-game season, in 60 games, if you get off to a hot start, you're right in it. It doesn't test your endurance. It doesn't test your depth as much as a regular baseball season. Got to take a break. Peter Gammons joins us at 6:40. But coming up next, simple question, is there a simple answer? Who is the Cubs' designated hitter in 2020? That's next. The Coom Dog is along. So's Tom Thayer. I'm Zach Zaidman. In for Mully and Haw on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Yeah, I think he's, you know, obviously somebody that we really believe in. He's got great character and he's a terrific communicator, leader. motivator. He's somebody that players really respond to. So I think he's, on top of everything else, the first year manager faces, he has an additional burden now to lead the way as far as compliance with these, with the health and safety protocols, and create a culture in which players are looking out not only for themselves, but for each other and all of us and all of our families as well. And that's something that I think, he's qualified to do based on his track record of leadership and how the players feel about him. So he's raring to go. I think he understands the breadth of the job, and that it's maybe even a little bit broader a job and more impactful job now than it was, before the pandemic hit, and he's certainly up for the challenge.
Yeah, there's, I could have prepared David Ross for what's ahead. Theo Epstein talking about his new manager, and you think about just the great managers over the years that David Ross played for, including Joe Maddon, Bobby Cox, just to name a few. I mean, the list goes on and on. Zach Zaidman, Tom Thayer, Ron Coomer with you in for Mully and Haw on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. We are less than 20 minutes away from talking to Hall of Fame baseball man Peter Gammons here on The Score. But until we get there, let's start with one of the biggest decisions that I think Rossi's going to have to make this season, Coom, and that is deciding on a designated hitter in the National League. And if you had a Wikipedia page for a National League DH, I feel like Kyle Schwarber would be the picture of what a National League designated hitter would look like. Is it as simple as that for the decision, Coom?
Well, I would have to agree with your first statement. He does fit the bill. The only problem is nobody told Kyle Schwarber that. And what he did is he turned himself into a very good defensive player, in the respect of he throws extremely well now. He's always had a great arm, but he has built up his defensive game to being overall an average defender in left field with an exceptional arm and a very accurate one. So his routes and things like that have become better and to where he's average, and his ability to cover ground is average, but his ability is a very athletic guy. Is the other thing people don't realize, extremely athletic. But the thing that he, where his game elevates is throwing the baseball. So he's one of those guys that has worked his way into being an outfielder and an everyday player defensively. So I don't think it's going to be as easy as you just say, Kyle, you're the DH. And listening to David Ross talk, and I always felt this way going in when we were talking about this role, I thought David was going to use this spot as a spot that's going to move from player to player. You're going to give off days to Bryant and Rizzo, maybe Baez, and let them DH at times. And Schwarber's going to be in that role too. And also matchups. You've got a tough lefty on the mound. Is Kyle Schwarber going to get a day off? And you're going to have a majority right-handed lineup in there where maybe KB goes to first. And you have Rizzo as the DH, and that gives Tony a day where he can get off his feet a little bit and just have four at bats. So I think that spot is going to rotate. But at the end of the day, when you're talking about playoff baseball and you're writing in your lineup for the first game of the playoffs and you got a right-handed pitcher on the mound, you might see Schwarber in the DH role.
Yeah, that was my question to you, Coom, because you almost minimalize it to one player. If they don't hit a certain style of pitcher very well, it's got to rotate throughout your roster. Is there any examples that the National League can learn from the American League about the way they went about their business throughout the regular season, that even if a player that comes over to the National League, or just how you incorporate that specific position into your lineup?
Well, there's what will happen is some of the guys, and I know Kyle did this, some of the guys will reach out to other players, other friends that have been designated hitters, and get some ideas on what and how they went about their job. Because the hardest part, Tommy, is staying totally engaged in the game when all you have to do is four at bats. So what do? Do you go in the cage and do you keep swinging and keep, you know, your body warm? Do you sit on the bench and watch the game? So there's a lot to it, and trying to maximize your ability to hit, and be prepared to hit four times. And then also there's a responsibility in how you want to interact with your teammates and just paying attention to the way the flow of the game. We're going to have a guy on here, Paul Molitor, is going to be on. And, you know, my big questions were about managing, because Paulie was manager of the year in the American League a few years back, but nobody was any better at that preparation to being a designated hitter than Paul Molitor. He could do both. He was kind of the coach on the bench, but he was also our number three hitter, and he DH'd probably last, you know, third of his career because of injury, but he did it as well as anybody. He would be a great guy, or anybody that did their job like that, be a great guy to pick their brain on how they did it.
And Paul Molitor will join us at 7:30 here on Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. All right, a few more questions about the Cubs, then we'll switch gears quickly to the White Sox. The biggest issue with the Cubs last season, there were four of them, in my opinion. One was the bullpen. The other was the leadoff spot. The second base position was a big problem for them for most of the year. And then you had the self-inflicted wounds of the errors and running themselves into more outs of any team in the majors. So how has David Ross gone about trying to rectify all those situations?
Well, when you go to camp, so when I get down to Phoenix and you were Mesa and you're watching the work, there was a lot more attention to specific parts of the game. The base running was something that was discussed at length, and they were doing more base running drills because I thought that part of the game had slipped quite a bit. The attention to detail on just taking care of the baseball, and I don't blame anybody for that from the last couple years, the slide and the Cubs not doing as well defensively, other than just the players themselves, because they have to take accountability to what they're doing day in and day out. And I know Javi has made some comments saying that, you know, he probably could have been on the field a little more in working at his defensive part of the game, or, you know, whatever it may be each day. That's a little, I couldn't understand that, but he stated it. Okay, now you got to do it. Part of your job as a big league player is to get out there and make sure you're prepared to play every day. So I think there was definitely an attention to detail on the defensive side and the speed of what their work was like. There was a lot more team drills, infield work, you know, Zach and Mesa and Tommy. And I liked seeing that because you were accountable then to the guys around you. It wasn't individual work. It was team defense work. And when you're with all of your team doing your job, it just ratchets everything up to an accountability factor that I thought was very good. So you anticipate with the talent this group has to be a very good defensive team. We'll see how that works out.
You know, Coom Dog, when you look at Tariq Cohen or Devin Hester, once the ball is in their hands, it's hard to coach them because they are creators. They're athletes. Sometimes they're going to reverse field that you spend countless amount of hours coaching against, but that's the way they see the field. So when you look at a base runner like Javi, do you coach him away from his thinking that he's had his entire baseball life, or do you allow him to challenge the aggressiveness that he feels when he feels he has confidence in?
I would say, Tommy, there's certain players on your team that you want to just let their abilities and the way they see the game just play. Hester, to me, was absolutely one. Javi, when you see him run the bases, he sees the game at a different speed than the rest of us do. The game slows down when he's watching the defense, and he's quicker than they are, and he always makes great decisions. Not always, but most of the time makes great decisions and advances the next 90 feet. The problem I thought with the Cubs in the last couple years, in particular last year, was some of the other guys on the team wanted to do that same thing that Javi was doing, only they didn't have the skill sets that Javi has to make that play. And it cost the Cubs a bunch. And it cost them in situations that you absolutely either had to make it or you don't try it. And I thought some of the young Cub players didn't understand that rule of thumb. There's no not working. It either has to work or you just stay put where you're at. So there's some of those things that have to be taught and understood. But when you got a guy like Javi on the bases, man, you just cut him loose and say, whatever you think works, go do it. Because there's nobody that you're going to – nobody can teach them. I mean, exactly. You know, there's another guy – I mean, I keep talking about Paul because he's on our show here coming up. Paul Molitor was one of them. He just – you know, he was freakish at how he could take an extra 90 feet on a team that you just went – I didn't even see that. And now I've been in baseball all my life, and he just saw the game at a different speed and saw vulnerabilities of the opposing team that most guys just never saw. Javi's that same way.
Less than 10 minutes away before we talk to the Hall of Famer Peter Gammons. Coming up at 7 o'clock, we will ask the Coondog, what is the impact of Grandal and Carcione and Mazzara into the White Sox lineup as we'll switch gears and go down to the south side. But the other question I have for you is, we know that Baez is at short. Who is the second baseman for the Cubs in 2020, Coom?
That's a good question. I would say Jason Kipnis will probably play against all the right-handed starters here to start the season. And then it will be kind of a take a look and see how guys are doing when it comes to Nico Horner and David Bode. Descalso you can throw in there, but I really believe that competition for the at-bats against the left-handed starters is between Horner and Bode. And unlike every other year, because we're only playing 60 games, and both of them are definitely above adequate defenders, so that part is kind of covered when it comes to the two right-handers and Bode and Horner. The guy that's swinging the bat well is the guy that's going to play. I really believe that. Horner may get the nod right away at the beginning to get a shot at starting, but whoever's hitting is going to play in that spot against the left-handed starters.
Yeah, last year the Cubs had a .220 batting average combined from all the second basemen that they had playing, just a .301 on base percentage and a .383 slugging percentage. So there is definite room for improvement there. Coom, we got to take a timeout. When we come back, we will visit with the Hall of Famer. Peter Gammons talks baseball with us. Thayer is here. I'm Zaidman. Coomer's along in for Molly and Haw on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Peter Gammons, MLB Network Analyst.
Around the pole and gone.
Taking you inside Major League Baseball with the Hall of Famer, Peter Gammons.
And Peter joins us now on the Alphamonte Ford Hotline. Alphamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Zach Zaidman, Ron Coomer, Tom Thayer in for Mully and Haw this morning on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Peter, good morning. How you doing?
I'm doing very well. What an honor to be on with Ron Coomer this time of the day.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. I'm not really sure how much baseball I'm going to get to see between now and 1st of October, but I'm hopeful. You know, I actually think, and I just don't know medically if I can carry it off. I do say this. I do think it's worth trying. Just to give up and say, we'll never be able to do it, I think would have been wrong. I think it's good to try. But on the other hand, I mean, it's going to be really hard. I mean, one, if you test positive, you're going to miss a third of the season, basically. I don't know where it goes, but I'll say this. If it does work, 60 games, everybody going, I mean, it reminds me of, you know, going to a stock car race and watching all those guys go around those little tracks at like 100 miles an hour, 120 miles an hour. I think it could be really fascinating. And I think it really will be no excuse baseball. Every day is important. And, you know, it'll be fun. It's not a real season. I get that. We don't have the great numbers and all those things. But I think at the same time, reading today, as I was on The Athletic, about that there's a whole group of really great players that were down in Florida working out at Eric Cressy's place in Palm Beach and Jupiter. I mean, just showed the idea that players don't want to play, and Ron, you know it better than I do. Baseball players really want to play. I think we have a chance that people could stay reasonably healthy to really have some fun that's unlike anything we've really seen before.
Well, Peter, first of all, thanks for being on with us this morning. But you've seen everything in baseball. You've been around our game forever. You're a Hall of Famer. But when you look at our game right now, first of all, I agree with you. It's in your blood. I always felt this way with baseball players who play a long time in the big leagues and have spent time in the minor leagues. It is in your blood. You are going to be around baseball if you're a player. You're going to create it. You're going to do it. It's just the way it is. You can't get away from it. Who do you think, when we go into this 60-game season, I mean, none of us have ever seen anything remotely close to this. Who do you think it benefits the most?
I think it benefits teams that have the largest stockpile of pitching. Young pitchers with big arms who, you know, I mean, first time you see them, you're not going to see some of these young guys coming in out of the bullpen for two innings. You know, you may get two at bats the entire season off them. And that's obviously an advantage to pitchers. I think the teams that are hoping to get the biggest jump out of this are teams like Miami, San Diego, teams that, you know, haven't been very good. Maybe Toronto. And you look at them and you say, all right, if we can really get hot for 25, 30 games, a couple of our young players, young hitters. I've been looking at the White Sox, too. I mean, if you're looking at guys like Robert and Mazzara, maybe pitchers haven't seen much of them. One time around the league, they could do a lot of damage. And what it does is it doesn't show that, wow, you know, you're a team that's a legitimate contender. But people may watch them, see them, say, hey, you know, this is going to be worth watching. We're ahead of schedule. Don Mattingly and I were talking about this yesterday. And he thinks, yeah, that's his whole – look, we can really start the reselling of this franchise in this period. We get lucky. We win 50% of our games, a little more than that. We're still in line to make the playoffs come September. It kind of changes the nature of the franchise, no matter how real it really might be. And I think that's those teams. I know San Diego's really centering on it. I think it's going to be in Toronto. In the end, I look at it like this. It's good for baseball because those teams, their owners are not going to be, they're going, oh, wow, maybe fans are getting some interest. Maybe we won't tank, you know, and that's good for the game.
Peter, I thought the one disappointing thing, there are a lot of them, but the one major disappointment in this contract negotiation with the owners and players union was the system going back because they couldn't get a resolution going back to the old playoff way, you know, with just the 10 teams. I really felt like, to the point you're making, boy, what that would have been like if Miami gets to have some playoff games again, or you get the Chicago White Sox and they get playoff games again, or Toronto, because, you know, there's been a lot of teams, you know, the same. The Cubs have been right there every year. The Dodgers have been right there. You look at Yankees, Red Sox, all these, you know, it's kind of the same, you know, Houston. And now all of a sudden, if you had that expanded playoff system, boy, there's some teams that would be throw-ins in a 60-game season that just haven't – their cities haven't experienced that in quite some time. That's the one thing that, boy, I wish, even though the commissioner had to implement the 60 games, I wish they could have got together and figured out a financial system to make it work so you could have had the expanded playoff system of 16 games.
Yeah, I really do agree with you there, Coom. I think it would be good. I mean, it's almost like a crazy Final Four month where, you know, somebody who was a 15 seed could even make the final play. And again, I mean, San Diego has been a franchise, for instance, that probably needs, I mean, they've said all along they need to have a good year this year. Well, now that good year is wrapped up in 60 games, but they have so much young power pitching, and they've got some really good players like Tatis and Manny Machado and so forth. And they could be really dangerous. As a matter of fact, I've been saying to people, the Dodgers, Diamondbacks, and the Padres together have a chance to have a great pennant race, even with 160 games. But I think in the 60 games, it's really accentuated for the Padres because some of their weaknesses won't tell out. You know, it's, you know very well. I mean, the longer you play out over a season, the more chance you have to get exposed. And this kind of thing is just, you know, boom, I'm playing three games, goodbye, don't see you again, go out and play, you know, the next team. It's, you know, there's no pretense to this being, you know, a legitimate, you know, 1999 or 1998 season. It is what it is. Well, we don't have anything that's normal. This plague that's hit this country has taken away all the normality in life. I live on Cape Cod. I've been over the bridge back to the mainland once since I got home on March 15th. I just 7 miles away. You know, so it's. But I am very worried that it can be carried off, just because we really seem to have no idea what to do. And we saw with the four or five Phillies guys that went and hung out together, and they ended up getting ill. And again, you miss 14. It's a 14-day quarantine. I mean, that's 14 out of 60 games is a lot of time to miss. If you get two or three players who get sick at the same time and they're pretty good players, your team is ravaged.
Hey, Peter, when you talk about this baseball season, you know, for those of us that just enjoy watching the sport and you think of 160 games, as a season starts, you kind of lazily sit back and see how the baseball season develops. And then 80 games into it, they start talking about some of the storylines. So are we going to be sitting on the edge of our seat from game one just because it's such a shortened season that every game from the start is going to be a factor in the end?
Oh, I think so. I don't think there's any question. You can get really damaged with a 10-day drought where you lose 9 out of 10. That could put you out. But you can get lucky. I mean, we've all seen mediocre teams that have run off 8 to 10 game winning streaks, and that might get them into the playoffs. I think one thing that's good is I think we can watch the players and watch them perform rather than worrying what their wins above replacement is. I mean, it's just players playing rather than players being evaluated because we want to be able to quantify everything by numbers. And I don't know about you, I hear it all the time now, for not just, you know, average, there's no such thing as an average baseball player if you're in the major leagues, but you know what I'm saying. But I mean, I hear from a lot of really good players. I mean, we're not numbers, we're players, we're people. And I think there's much too much evaluation of players by numbers these days rather than understanding, you know, why somebody really is a great player and being, and you know, being around them in the clubhouse and what they do for teammates and what that all adds up to. And I think we may just have a 2 month period where we go, wow, you know, I don't need to look at the box score. I want to see Mike Trout and guys like that play every day. I mean, personally, I can't wait to see Madrigal play. I saw him play a little bit on Team USA. He was one of my favorite guys. It's like watching Dustin Pedroia again. And I think he's going to be a great player, a really good player. I think he's going to be a Bregman kind of guy. But, maybe we just watch the players and have fun watching rather than worrying about whether they're worth.
Well, you're going to see more of the heart and soul of a guy and a team. I really believe that, because you don't have all this time to evaluate and put a number on everything. So every strikeout in a big situation is going to be that much more important. And every big swing of the bat and a guy hitting a double to help your team win a game is going to mean that much more. I really think, the sad thing is we're not able to high five and hug and do all those things in a dugout, because you're going to see the emotion of our game a lot like football, maybe not quite to that extreme, but much more like that. The ups and downs of a game for major league players, you're going to see a lot more of that than the, where it doesn't seem like some guys have a heartbeat. You're going to see it this year. And I look forward to that. I really do.
I do too. I mean, it's one of those things, not to single out one person, but one of the reasons that I just love watching Mike Trout is he's a guy who weighs 240 pounds and he's 3'9" or 4'0" to first base every time he hits the ball. And there's something beautiful about that. I mean, I remember once with a great scout, Gordon Lakey, who worked for Toronto, and he did the advance for them for years. And in a 6-year period, he covered 90 games that Robin Yount played. The fastest he ever saw him was 3'9" to first. The slowest he ever saw him, 4'0". And he clocked every single at bat. And, Robin's a great athlete. There's no question about that. But that's part of what makes Robin Yount such an undeniable Hall of Famer. And I think it probably added to his resume even more because, hit the ball to the shortstop. I mean, a couple of weeks ago, Marcus Semien said to me, Mike Trout going to first base, 240 pounds, two steps to the right on a hard hit ground ball, he beats my best throw, and I can really throw. And he said, as a player, and Marcus Semien has played more innings in the field than anybody in baseball the last 3 years, he said, it's just, sometimes I go, God, I can't believe he beat that. And then I go, man, am I lucky to be playing in the same field. I love that.
Cranked out two home runs against the Cubs at Wrigley Field last season in interleague play. Our final few moments here with Peter Gammons on the score. And I know that you've talked about it and you posted it on Twitter about how a baseball lifer told you, remember, one positive test could cost one a quarter of the season. What worries me is if we get to the World Series, there will be 8 AA guys on the field. What do the current day players think about the climate that they're returning to?
I really worried about that. And some of my colleagues who I really respect are more worried than I'm very concerned. But on the other hand, I think there may be peer pressure. And Mike Hazen, general manager of the Diamondbacks, said to me, these guys don't get to the major leagues without wanting to win. And so I think there's going to be a lot of peer pressure. You're just going to have to live without going out every night for 2 months. Is that tough? You get it in the playoffs? I mean, you really get to play for something? Whether this World Series will never be thought of as, being a 162-game one game for a playoff and then, free postseason series type of season. But on the other hand, you still win in a season If it's 60 games, it still means a lot. It's a lot better than finishing sixth in a 60-game season.
Well said. Happy 4th, Peter. Thank you so much for sharing your knowledge with us.
Okay, well, remember, it's George Steinbrenner's birthday tomorrow, so.
Very nice, the boss, my old boss. Peter, thank you for coming on with us. Always great to talk to you. I look forward to seeing you come off the island and come back to us here during the season when we can all get together.
Okay, thanks a lot. I really appreciate it.
The Hall of Famer, Peter Gammons, here on The Score. When we come back, we'll break down the 2020 White Sox. Plus, Tom, you're going to love this. Coombs vintage George Steinbrenner story, the first time he put on the pinstripes before his first season with the Yankees. That's next. Zach Zabeman, Ron Coomer, Tom Thayer in for Mully and Haw on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.